a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I have the pleasure of calling the Senate Commerce Committee to order, and I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Adelstein?
Here.
Gant?
Here.
Merchant? Nesselhoff?
Here.
Terbeck-Berry?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Olson?
And a quorum is present. I'd like to start off by introducing the Legislative Research Council staff member, Jackie Storm, who was with us last year, and we're lucky to have her back, and thank her for all of her guidance throughout the upcoming season that we're going to ask for. And also introduce Lois Henry, who is the secretary for this committee, and Lois actually also served with us last year, so we're happy to have Lois back with us. And we have two pages with us this morning, and I would just I'm looking for their names and where they're from, and I'll come back to that in a second, and we'll introduce them. We're going to start off today's meeting with an update from Senator Nelson. This summer, there's a number of bills that will come to our committee from the summer study on alcohol beverage control and licensure, and some of us weren't on that committee, so I feel that it's important to do an overview of that summer study's findings and allow Senator Nelson, who chaired that summer study, to bring us up to speed on where we're at. I anticipate that should take no more than a half an hour. And then we will move on to our agenda. We have three bills on the agenda, Senate Bill 56, 57, and 60, all from the Public Utilities Commission on behalf of this committee. And so I would ask the committee to indulge me by letting Senator Nelson give an overview of the summer study. And I would ask Senator Nelson to answer questions as they come up. This isn't an actual, he isn't pitching any of these bills. He's just going to bring you up to speed on the progress of the summer study. So feel free to ask questions, and we'll have kind of a informal update from this for this committee's behalf. And if you have questions, feel free to ask Senator Nelson.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Senator?
Did you intend that to be a half of a 60-minute hour?
The introduction took nearly that long, Senator. So with further ado, Senator Nelson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to give you a bit of a rundown on the work of the summer study on alcohol laws. There have been several summer studies in the past, none of which that produced or garnered any legislation that made any major changes to Chapter 35. However, this year we did spend a great deal of time, three full days, and dug deep into the chapter, and we have produced seven pieces of legislation, which will all come to this, three pieces, our Senate bills, four, our House bills, and we'll take them as we get. And I will give you the Reader's Digest of the bills that are being presented, and also be happy to answer any questions along the way. If I cannot answer those questions, I will certainly make sure someone is here when the bills are taken up so that they can be answered correctly. The first on the Senate side, Senate Bill 2, is what we have called Botts's baby. Fred really dug into the code, condensed about 60 pages of code down to 27. Most of this bill is a style and form bill. There is a little bit of substance to it, but by and large, it removes some redundancies. It redefines some different things that have come about in the last 20 or 30 years. It moves some things in the chapter, but for the most part, it is just a cleanup bill and a style and form bill. And I will tell you that this bill we will probably take up last, simply because the other six bills may have some implications on what this bill will end up being. But again, this is primarily style and form, definitions, clarity, redefines the secretary. It used to be the Secretary of Revenue, now it's Secretary of Revenue and Regulation, defines KEGS, defines relatives, things like that that really needed to be done. And if nothing else came out of the summer study, I was very pleased that this particular bill did show up. Senate Bill 3 then is an act to require non-discriminatory pricing between malt beverage suppliers and malt beverage wholesalers, with freight being divorced from that. The thought behind this bill was that wholesalers were delivering product or selling product at a variety of prices throughout the state, and this makes sure that if a retailer wholesaler in Mobridge is being charged the same price as would be in any other spot of part of the state. Fairly simple and straightforward. However, I do believe that we'll have a lot of discussion on that on both sides, from the wholesalers, retailers, as well as from the department. Senate Bill 4 is a fairly simple bill as well. Years ago, when the 1.75 liter bottles of alcohol became available, they became available only to on-sale properties that had a gun system, a dispensing system. Obviously, just simply by volume, they are cheaper to purchase, they are cheaper to pour from, and what we are doing in this bill is removing the restriction of the property having a gun system to dispense it. The fear... Yes?
A
dispensing system where you pour out of a gun, you hit...
The physical thing you put on a bottle of booze to help you.
No, that's slightly different, but a gun system is where it's distributed through a line to the gun at the bar, and if you hit Jack Daniels, you're going to get whatever the predetermined amount of Jack Daniels is, as opposed to the 750s, which are the ones that are typically at a bar, which use what you had talked about, or free pour. And the fear, from what I understand years ago, is that you would purchase, or an unscrupulous bartender would purchase a 175 of rot gut and pour it into a 750 of high end, and then pour the rot gut as high end. And there's been discussion that's not going to happen. So what it does is it makes available the cheaper product for all bars to use. That's basically it. And that was 4. House Bill 101 is another good bill. It currently in statute, there are 19 ways that a municipality or a county or a local government agency can issue a temporary or special license, whether it be to a county fair, to a chamber of commerce, to whomever. There are 19 ways that can happen in the state of South Dakota. We have condensed it down to 4. All local control, all governed by the city or county or whoever the governing agency is, and basically it allows for a malt beverage license, it allows for an on-sale wine license, it allows for a regular on-sale license, and a special off-sale package wine license. It allows for our farm wineries to be able to attend county fairs, et cetera, to distribute and sell their product. It allows for street dances. It allows for everything that the municipality or the county would like to have. And it allows a nonprofit to have that license, Chamber of Commerce, VFW, whatever. It also allows for a licensed business in that community to get a special license where they can do that at a different location. Case in point, in Lead, the Chamber of Commerce sponsors the annual 4th of July beer tent. They go through a great deal of getting volunteers, a great deal of expense. There is a possibility that they just might be able to bid that out and let one of the local bars take that over, put up a bid, and they take over the responsibility for it. So it allows that licensee to also be able to have a temporary license on an off-site. So, again, that is what I think is an excellent bill. And, again, it just condenses a lot of confusion, a lot of ways to do it down to 4. We're not excluding any current ways to get a special or temporary license. We just condensed it down to 4 ways to do it. Again, if there's any questions as we go through these, complete or at the end, that's fine as well. House Bill 1002 removes the prohibition of selling alcohol on Christmas and Memorial Day. And we do have an amendment because it was inadvertently left out of the original legislation, which allows for the municipality or the county to continue that prohibition. So, again, it is local control. It would statewide remove the prohibitions on Christmas and Memorial Day, but allow a city, if Lead wants to continue the prohibitions, they can. Sioux Falls, Pier, it doesn't matter. They still have that opportunity to keep it the same way. House Bill 1003... Several years ago, the legislature approved for additional restaurant liquor licenses in municipalities and counties. At that time, the municipality or county had to establish what that license fee would be based on either the population of that local governing body or the most recent sale. And then once that license is established, they have to wait 10 years to reestablish that price. Case in point, there was a situation where there was a licensed establishment sold a few years ago. They put all of the assets into the license with very little into the personal property, into the property and into FF&E. And so as a result, the license was extremely overstated. To the tune of about $125,000, when it probably was more realistically at $15,000 to $25,000. Again, they have to wait 10 years to do that. What we've done in this bill is just reduce that time from 10 years to 5, that they can reassess that that extra restaurant license fee. And 1004 extends dram shop protections to an employer whose employee causes an accident or a civil liability. Case in point, a convenience store owner had a teenage employee, that stole beer, got drunk, and was in an accident. And it protects the employer from liability. Basically, it extends that dram shop liability to the employer in that case that an employee does an illegal act and then takes advantage of what the alcohol is on the premise. And those are the 7 in a nutshell. I'll take the next 15 minutes for questions, Senator Gant.
Was there any discussion in the committee about finally making it possible for South Dakota to have the exchange where they could sell South Dakota wines over them in the mail or by shipping them, and to then make it so that we could take them into the state?
That received very little discussion early on in the committee hearings, and nothing came of it.
Did you folks otherwise talk about the direct shipment of wine into South Dakota, or was that not one of your topics?
That was not one of our topics. We touched on it very briefly, but did not pursue it.
Any other further questions for Senator Nelson regarding the summer study? If not, I'd like to thank Senator Nelson for chairing that committee and excellent overview of the bills that are going to come before both the House and the Senate this year. I'd like to introduce our pages. And Amanda, please forgive me if I don't pronounce your last name correctly, but is it Amanda Shacko? And Amanda's from Lemon, and Carmen Niemeyer from Brookings is with us for the two-week period, and our interns that we'll have throughout the session. Suzanne Jones from Burke is with us, Jennifer Pogany from Pier, and then we have Alex Vargo from Rapid City. So welcome to all of you, and we appreciate the assistance that you'll give this committee as well. With that, I would like to remind anyone testifying before us today to once again sign in at the lectern. And with that, we will take up the bills for consideration today. The first bill on our roster will take proponent testimony for Senate Bill 56, which is an act to update certain
citations to federal regulations regarding pipeline safety inspection. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Rolaine Wiest. I'm an attorney with the Public Utilities Commission. Senate Bill 56 updates the dates for federal regulations and laws regarding pipeline safety inspections. And the dates changed from 2009 to 2010, and these are the only changes. And, of course, as a result of these changes, the commission would be able to enforce new federal laws and regulations that have gone into effect since in 2009. One thing we would like to bring up, though, is that there is a major change that will be effective the first week in February, and this is the Distribution Integrity Management Rule. This rule establishes integrity management requirements for gas distribution pipeline systems and would enhance safety by identifying and reducing pipeline integrity risks. So in order to be able to enforce these new requirements, what we would like to do is amend this bill in the House Commerce Committee after February 6th, change the date from January 1st, 2010 to February 6th, 2010, and then we would ask the Senate to concur in these amendments. And then with these amendments, the PUC would then be able to enforce these new rules that will go into effect. Thank you.
Any other proponents for Senate Bill 56? Additional proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 56? No opponents? Seeing none, we will close for committee discussion and or action. Second. There's been a motion by Senator Turback-Berry and a second from Senator Nesselhoff do pass. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Elsie.
Is there any reason that we should delay the adoption of the amendment till the bill comes back from the House? In other words, the amendment that's recommended, why should we go through the process twice?
Good question. I guess I'd relay that to Ms. Wiest.
I believe we would have to get it out of this House, though, before the deadline.
If I might, the date they're looking at is the date in the future. We need to wait for that date to happen before we
continue. Simply a matter of going through the process, allowing the date to become actually on the calendar before it can be changed.
Yes.
Okay, I understand.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Gant.
And maybe Jackie just answered that, but they're proposing to have a meeting on February 6th, and you want to get the results of that meeting into this law. So that meeting may not take place on February 6th.
Chairman, which meeting are you referring to?
Whatever you're referring to on February 6th.
The actual rule that we're trying to be able to enforce after July 1st is actually effective February 4th, and so I just picked February 6th that we would like it to go on to the House side, so that at that point the rule would actually be in effect, and then we could, then it would be permissible for us to change it to that February 6th date.
Senator Gand, any other questions? Any other questions from the committee or discussion? We have a do pass motion before us. Any other discussion? With that, I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Turback-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Senate Bill 56 is hereby declared passed. And on with PUC Day, we will... there's been a motion for consent for Senate Bill 56. Second, all those in favor of placing Senate Bill 56 on the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very well. The Senate Bill 56 will go on the consent calendar. The motion for consent was by Senator Nesselhoff, seconded by Senator Merchant. Very well. We'll now hear proponent testimony for Senate Bill 57. Go ahead.
Thank you. Rolaine Wiest with the PUC. With Senate Bill 57, the Commission seeks to revise the timeframes that apply to electric service area disputes, as well as adequacy of service complaints. The reason that we're proposing the revised timeframes is because both service area disputes and adequacy of service disputes, they usually involve disputed facts and will likely require a hearing. And under the current timeframe, that would require the PUC to hold a hearing within 15 days after an application or complaint is filed, and then issue a decision within 30 days after the hearing. And our problem is that often this short time frame would not allow sufficient time for pre-hearing activities such as discovery. So with our proposed revisions, it would allow the PUC 60 days to issue a decision. We do not specify a time frame to hold the hearing within that 60 days. Instead, the commission would be allowed to set the hearing sometime within those 60 days. And in addition, the revisions also recognize that 60 days may not be sufficient time period to resolve the issues. And so with the last sentence, the commission would be allowed to extend that time frame if requested by a party to the proceeding, and the commission found good cause to grant that extension. Thank you.
Any additional proponents for Senate Bill 57? Additional proponents? We'll move on to opponents. Any opponents to Senate Bill 57? It's going to be an easy day for you today. No opponents to Senate Bill 57. We will close public testimony and move to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
I move due pass.
There's been a motion by Senator Adelstein for due pass. And a second by Senator Merchant. We have a due pass motion. Any other discussion on the motion? Senator Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question about that last line where the commission may extend the time for a decision. That's pretty open-ended, where current law says it has to be a decision within 30 days, and now with this extension, I suppose it's possible it could go on forever. So I was wondering what the PUC's plan was there.
Mr. Chairman, I believe this is similar to some of the other, it's probably in our rules that allow us to grant extensions for good cause. I assume the other party, if the other party had a problem with the extension, they could certainly oppose such an extension, and we would hear from all the parties at that point. But we don't have an actual, you know, outside time frame in there. That's correct.
Senator Turbeckberry.
I don't have a question. I think we're done with the testimony, weren't we? Weren't we engaged in discussion? I do have, maybe a similar concern. I don't know what the history is, but obviously at some point in the past, someone thought it was important to place a time frame on the time limit on the time for decision making, and I'm a little uncomfortable just getting completely throwing that out without knowing the history or whether that how that compares to either how other what other time limits might be imposed on boards and commissions or adjudicatory bodies. So I feel real concerned about just throwing away a time deadline when apparently somebody in the past thought it was important. I can imagine it's inconvenient if you're limited by it, but if somebody on the committee or staff can enlighten me, I'd feel a lot better about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree. I don't understand why the PUC is taking away a deadline there. If anything, we should add something in line 11 after the word for a decision up to 90 days, or I don't even know if you want to go up to 120 days, but we're already giving an additional 30 days, so if we want to say up to an additional 30 days, something to that effect. I just think there needs to be an end date there unless the PUC can come up with some concrete evidence that we don't have to have an end date. Otherwise, I think we need to keep an end date.
Senator Merchant?
I would like to move an amendment, possibly, just since we're extending this by 30 days, potentially, that we should rescind the scratched area in Section 1, line 5 through 12, the portion that is scratched, just insert rather 30 days, 60, the very last paragraph. Do not scratch anything there, but apply 60 rather than 30. No end date, no extension.
I'm confused on the amendment.
Okay, the last paragraph, rather than scratch anything there. Okay? We would otherwise insert 60 rather than 30 days. Okay, line 8, decision within 60 days after said hearing. So going back to the original bill. So not having an extension by the PUC for the last portion.
Mr. Chairman, question.
We have a motion to amend on the table.
Oh, I have a question on the amendment.
And it has not been seconded.
Mr. Chairman, can you read the motion?
I'd love to be able to.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Senator Merchant, would you please, for my...
All the changes in the bill, the extension that they're adding, doubling the time amount that they are requesting, but do not have the extra ability to extend beyond the extra 15 days. Okay.
If I might be a little helpful, I think we can get to the essence of Senator Merchant's amendment, simply leaving the overstrikes and removing the final sentence. And that way, we still double the time that the commission has. We get rid of the 15-day limit, but we don't allow it to go indefinitely into the future. So the amendment that I would propose would be to leave the overstrikes in place and simply eliminate the final sentence starting in line 10, that the commission may extend the time for a decision.
There wasn't actually a second on the first amendment, so the amendment is dead. And then Senator Nesselhoff has proposed an amendment to Senate Bill 57 that would strike the last line of the inserted line, that the commission may extend the time for a decision if requested by a party to the proceeding and the commission finds good cause to grant the extension, and adding nothing.
In other words, everything after the period in line 10 would be stricken from Senate Bill 57. That's what I understand the amendment to be. Is that right? All right. And that's what I seconded.
And a motion and a second on the amendment. Those in favor of the amended amendment?
One more question on the amendment. Are you removing the strikeouts then in line 7 through the 9 down to the period after the 10?
Correct. Any other discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment passes. We'll go on to further discussion of Senate Bill 57 as amended. Seeing no other discussion, I'd entertain a motion on Senate Bill 57 as amended. Senator Gant has moved do pass for Senate Bill 57 as amended, seconded by Senator Turback-Berry. Any other discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll on Senate Bill 57 as amended.
Edelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselbaum?
Aye.
Turback-Berry?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 57 is hereby declared passed as amended. Will now bring us to Senate Bill 60, the final bill. I'm sorry, Ms. Wiest, if I jinxed you by saying it was going to be an easy day for you here at Commerce. Please go ahead with Senate Bill 60.
Thank you. Relaine Wiest again with the Public Utilities Commission. Senate Bill 60, the primary reason for this bill is to clarify what modifications to existing energy facilities require PUC approval. The revisions contained in Senate Bill 60 have the following components. First, the revisions clarify that the siting of electric transmission lines that are upgraded would be subject to the PUC's siting authority. The first change that addresses this issue is found in Section 1, page 2, line 2, by the addition of the words "or modified" to the definition of construction. Then, a modified electric transmission line is then defined in Section 3, page 5, lines 1 through 5. This provision provides that if an existing transmission facility that did not require siting, and under our statutes this would be a transmission line that is 115 kilovolts or less, if that existing line is subsequently upgraded to exceed 115 kilovolts, then that line would be subject to our siting authority. Going next to the second part of that sentence, if an existing facility that exceeds 115 kV is subsequently upgraded by an additional 20 kilovolts, then that line would be subject to our siting authority. The second component is similar in that it clarifies that an energy conversion facility increased by 25 megawatts or more requires a permit, and that can be found at Section 3, page 5, lines 6 through 7. The third component is probably the most complicated one, and that clarifies the PUC's siting jurisdiction over gas or liquid transmission lines. First, in Section 2, on page 3, beginning on line 21, changes were made to clarify an issue that has arisen regarding the operation of gas or liquid transmission pipelines. The changes are designed to make it clear that in order to be actually exempt from our siting authority, a line must not be capable of being operated over a certain stress or design level. And the reason for this change is because the current language could be interpreted to mean that a line could meet the exemption from siting if it was not actually operated at a certain stress or design level, even though it was capable of being operated at a higher level. Section 3, page 4, lines 13 through 15, then clarify that a gas or liquid transmission line that is modified so that it meets the definition of a transmission facility after the modification is complete is required to comply with siting requirements. The second two sentences are somewhat complicated, but are actually written in effect to grandfather in pipelines that may be capable of operating above the exemption level but are actually operated at less than the specified stress or design pressure. The operator would need to comply with our siting statutes only if the operator intended to exceed those limits. Going to our fourth component, that changes a time frame for when an applicant needs to notify landowners that a facility is being constructed and notify the landowners of the date of the public hearing held by the PUC. Under the current time frame, it's often difficult for an applicant to get the notices out in a timely fashion. The reason is because within 30 days, a PUC needs to schedule a public hearing, publish notice in the paper, and then hold a hearing within 30 days after that public notice. The applicant needs to notify landowners by certified mail and publish twice in the paper. So this would give the applicant a little extra time to get that notice published twice in the paper prior to the deadline. And the final section, Section 5, that just merely corrects a typographical error that has existed. On page 6, line 3, it changes waste supply to water supply. And we think that with these clarifications, our authority for siting will be well-defined so that operators of energy facilities will know what facilities will be subject to siting requirements. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents for Senate Bill 60? Seeing none, any opponents to Senate Bill 60? Any opponents to Senate Bill 60? Seeing none, I close the committee to public testimony and open Senate Bill 60 to committee discussion and interaction. Questions? Sorry. Senator Alstein.
Well, I do have a question. I guess I would just like you to go back over that the notice to adjacent landowners provision. You talked a little faster than my brain would go. Explain to me again what are the parameters that make it difficult for an applicant to give 30 days, such that we're suggesting they cut that down to 20.
Mr. Chairman, Well, under our existing statutes, what happens is that the PUC has to schedule, once we get the application, we have to schedule a public hearing within 30 days, publish notice in the paper, and then hold the hearing within 30 days after that. Now, the applicant's notice is a little more involved because they have to do certified mail, plus they have to publish it 2 consecutive weeks in the paper. And so you almost have to schedule the hearing, you know, prior to the applicant almost filing their application in order for the timelines to work well. And so we thought if we just shorten that time frame a little bit, then it would give sufficient time for the applicant to get all of their notices out in a timely fashion.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Gant.
A follow-up question to that. Isn't it, if the applicant is going through the process to submit the information to the PUC, why wouldn't they then just at the same time also submit the stuff to the landowners? I don't see why they need to wait 10 days so that the landowner has 10 days less to try and figure out what's going on, and if they're in favor or against it, we've now shortened their time from 30 days to 20 days, and if they're, like I said, in favor or opposed, I think that's hurting the landowner. So why is this good?
Mr. Chairman, the issue is that it's because of the other statutory requirements that require the commission to hold a public hearing fairly quickly in the process. And so before that, the landowner can send out their notification, the commission would have to go through the process of setting up the date of the hearing. So that's why the applicant cannot notify the landowners and publish it right away. It's just a timing question. And of course, they do have to do it at least 2 consecutive weeks within that time period also in the paper besides the certified mail.
Question. Are there scenarios, are you saying there are scenarios where it's impossible to give the notice or just that it's difficult for the applicant?
Mr. Chairman, no, that it's difficult. Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
Now, when you describe a fluid, do you mean the PUC then regulates water transmission lines as well?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Where is the liquid defined? I've looked at it several times, and once upon a time I was an engineer, and I was supposed to know this sort of thing.
Mr. Chairman, yes. If you go to page 3, line 16, that actually defines a gas or liquid transmission line. And it talks about transporting coal, gas, liquid hydrocarbon products, or carbon dioxide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's unclear, but this is not the appropriate time to raise it. Thank you.
Additional questions at this time? Then we'll try for the second time to close public testimony for Senate Bill 60 and open it up for committee discussion and interaction.
Mr. Chair, as indicated, I suppose, by my question, I do have a concern with trimming back the notice time to adjacent landowners. It seems to me that the applicant always knows that they're going to be an applicant. They've got plenty of time to prepare. Landowners may well be caught off guard if they don't know an application is coming. And even though I'm sympathetic to the fact it might be difficult, as long as it's still possible, I think that it's far better that landowners have another 10 days to apprise, evaluate the situation, decide if they want to become involved, than it is that we simply make it easier for the applicant.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that on line 17 and 18 of page 5 that we delete the addition and make the bill the way it was, or the language in its original intent.
Senator Gant has moved an amendment to Senate Bill 60,
Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second to amend Senate Bill 60, line 17 and 18 on page 5 to delete the addition. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of amending Senate Bill 60, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes, and Senate Bill 60 has been amended, and I would encourage any further discussion on Senate Bill 60 or action as amended. There's been a motion by Senator Turbeck-Berry and a second by Senator Merchant do pass Senate Bill 60 as amended. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, the Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Adelstein?
Aye.
Senator Gant?
Aye.
Senator Merchant?
Aye.
Senator Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Senator Turbeck-Berry?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Senate Bill 60 is hereby declared passed as amended. We have no other business before this committee at this time, and the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Gant, seconded by Senator Merchant to adjourn. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I'd also remind the committee to leave your binders for the secretaries and the pages to gather up, and look forward to seeing you guys on Thursday.